Snack Bar Games Podcast. And welcome to the Snack Bar Games Podcast. This is episode 259. I am Graham, and this week we have a scrappy panel with us this week. Sean, you're here, right?
Mostly, yes.
Okay, how's it going?
It's going all right.
Yeah?
Trying to deal with cars and games at the same time.
I wouldn't. That usually results in crashes of one of them.
Well, luckily I was playing Burnout, so it works.
All right. Andrew's here. Andrew, how's it going?
Going all right. I have five sharks in my pocket. In Animal Crossing, of course.
Only five?
Yeah, only five right now. I had to stop because of the podcast.
I don't...
What?
Shouldn't you be selling those?
I'm on the island right now, man. Catching them sharks.
Okay. All right.
That's my catchphrase for this week. I'm sorry.
Speaking of catching them sharks, I guess.
What?
Joining us this episode, it doesn't make sense.
That's
joining
worse than my segues.
Yep. Intentionally, though. So which makes it better? Anyway, Chris Ingersoll's here with us this week. Hey, Chris, how's it going?
It is. I am crossing animals and hunting monsters.
Yeah.
Which, to be fair, crossing animals is the closest thing a video game comes to my actual job description, so.
Fair.
Although not quite this way. I'm not the mayor.
Do you owe a raccoon a great debt as well?
I don't think it's a raccoon, but I hope not anyway.
Okay. There's really no way of knowing though.
Right. Yeah.
As long as his name's not Tom, I think we're okay.
Right.
Yeah. He uses a shell corporation, so. All right. So this is usually the point in the episode where I say, let's go ahead and jump into news.
Yeah,
but, there hasn't been that much.
We've only heard one thing of news since E3 and no one's talking. Although everyone talked a lot about this.
Yeah. Layton Brothers Mystery Room. Right. Is that what we're talking about? That thing came out in English. Right.
Yeah.
Unfortunately,
it was iOS,
that.
So I can't play it ever.
You can play it as soon as you buy an iOS device,
which is never so.
Or you borrow one from someone else in exchange for paying the money on their account to get the game.
It's actually
do iOS games work on OS X through the App Store?
Yeah, no. It's 10. No.
Okay, then no, I will never have one.
Hey.
Sorry.
Okay, so let's move on to the actual news instead of just being weird about my silly quip.
Okay. Well, next we have
first, last.
Only. First, last. Who knows? Microsoft changed its direction so many times. We will not be having online-only DRM in the Xbox One after all, because Microsoft changed their mind after realizing that
everybody and their grandmother hated it, right? It's like market research at all, ever?
Yeah.
Who needs that?
That and this generation. There's a certain degree of game theory to it, I think.
Yeah.
So first, let's say what it is. So yeah, it's basically like reversing its positions and lots of things. And not only the DRM and the only always online stuff, but also the positive
things.
Parts of that. Being able to access your collection online and things like that.
And no more discs needed.
Yeah.
And the
family plan thing.
I mean, lose their specified retailer thing too?
Believe so, yeah.
Yeah, because once you have the disc, you just sell that.
So. I mean, that said, I believe those policies are in place for digitally purchased content, so you might still be able to do that. You just can't get both of them at the same time. You can't buy the disc version, have the disc version, play offline. And but we're unclear if if you bought it online, you clearly don't need to have a disc in to play it, and maybe you'll be able to play it at other people's places. Like, I don't know.
I'm assuming it's going to work the same as the as the 360 does. If you have your account on it, on that system, you can probably play the game. Assuming, yeah, assuming you're connected, assuming you're connected online, I think that's how
right.
it works.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So. But yeah. So like I said, I think it's game theory. I think it was a matter of
that's
Microsoft
where they thought
making these, thinking that Sony would jump with them, and honestly, as much as
Spanish prisoners
didn't like it, there's a lot of it that, you know, would have benefited companies and indirectly consumers again. Like, if you want games, it's good if people get paid to make games.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah.
I think it's a problem because they kind of tried to keep the retailers happy with discs. Even if at that point, if they could stuck with their policies, the discs would be essentially useless once you use them once.
Yep.
But they wanted to have something for them to sell. Yeah. Least brand new. Obviously, it affected the used game market for stores like GameStop, but
yeah.
they wanted to continue to make like the Walmarts of the world happy and whatnot. So
that, and it if you think about it, shipping product to stores is a pretty big marketing thing.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah,
like it's why digital only games don't sell particularly well, even if they're marketed like even if a game isn't marketed at all, if it's on shelves, people see it.
Yeah,
and it'll
exactly.
sell better.
Like, you'd be surprised how many games sell just from someone sitting it on the shelf and saying, oh, that looks okay.
Yeah.
It actually happens a lot.
Even if they see it and then go back and buy it digitally, or see it and then go back and buy it on Amazon.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think there's a vested interest in being in stores. And, you know, once you stop selling software, it's just hardware in stores. And the margins aren't that great on that stuff.
Yeah.
I know accessories are huge, and accessories will continue to be huge. Don't expect accessories to cost more as time goes on, as they make margins larger and larger on the one thing they can make money off of.
But they're bundling their biggest accessory with the thing still.
Yeah. So, yeah, the Kinect, I mean, I think that's clearly from a development perspective. If everyone has a Kinect, then it's zero deal to put in Kinect features.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
I think that's the problem. Well, but the potential problem with the PS4, I think, you know, you might get a lot of games that have potentially really cool features, but half or more of the audience that owns a PS4 can't use them because they never bought that camera.
And I bet we'll still get some of that because they'll be developing cross-platform and have the same functionality on both systems.
Yeah.
But I like the idea of having it always there. That way it's not like, oh, well, this is a Kinect game. It needs to use all these Kinect things. No, it can just use one of them. It can just use voice commands, and that's perfectly fine, you know?
Yeah, I do think that's cool. And just having the Kinect as – I mean, I don't know how much I'll use it versus just, you know, using the controller to navigate the actual dashboard or whatnot.
Yeah.
But I've never really used a Kinect outside of maybe playing Dance Central once. So actually being able to do that, and with a Kinect that is probably going to be a lot better.
I think it's a great. I mean, even with the 360, I generally don't use the Kinect even in Kinect games to navigate menus within the game. But like telling it to start playing the disc so it'll load up, and then I'll come back, and then I'll find the controller, and then I'll turn it on. Like it saves time. It's nice. But I'd like to see that.
I recall you also enjoyed being able to say your conversation options in Mass Effect 3.
Yep.
So you can make a sandwich.
Yep, sandwich mode.
Yep.
You can also eat the sandwich. You don't have to.
Oh, yes, that's
it's
true.
All encompassing sandwich mode.
So everyone who buys an Xbox One will be able to make sandwiches.
Yeah.
All the time.
Yeah.
That's great.
Yeah.
It's great.
It is.
The best news to come out of all of this, I think.
Yeah.
Why is that not part of their advertisement? You can make sandwiches.
I know, right? Microsoft has trouble with, you know, telling people what they want to hear.
They have, at least with this system anyway.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I don't want to kick the company while it's down. It has gone from making a potentially rough but maybe worth it decision to a slightly better for consumers and potentially worth it decision.
Yeah,
you know,
I think it's just too soon for that.
Think next console generation that'll happen for both sides.
Yeah, I think they were planning on that happening a little bit earlier than it was ready for.
Yeah, I mean, I can understand why they thought Sony might jump in with them also, because Sony patented the same technology 8 years ago. They just didn't use it yet. So, there's a large portion of at least the U.S. and I'm sure plenty of other countries that just don't have the technology to handle an online connection like that yet.
Yeah, I mean, there was just so much PR that was going bad ways. Like,
and of
when,
course, saying, "Well, then buy the 360 instead." That doesn't.
That
help.
Was the.
That's the worst
thing
anybody
ever lost. That was horrible.
Yeah. Yep. But yeah, like some of those stories, although, like The Witcher devs can't play their own game on the Xbox One because they live in Poland, and in Poland you can't have it. Like, just that stuff was rough.
And, yeah.
And Metal Gear Solid 5 in Japan. Yeah.
Yep. Anyway,
I will say real quick, my favorite PR speak thing that came out after between E3 and now was Nintendo's stance on the used game problem. You guys hear that?
Yeah, I did hear that. Yeah. I definitely agree with them on it too.
It's like, if you make good games, there is no used game problem.
Yeah.
They're like, we don't have a used game problem. No one sells our games.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
And the other thing they, and to get back to the, tie this into the actual story, the other thing they mentioned was, you know what else is really hard to turn in? The digital copies of the games that we've been selling. With like their Fire Emblems, the Animal Crossings, everything that they've been releasing online.
Yep.
That has no secondary market.
Yeah.
So.
Yep.
So clearly the industry is heading in that direction. It's just not ready for it this go around.
Yep.
Indeed.
All right. Okay. So we don't really have any other news, so we can just move on and talk about stuff.
All right. Yeah. Let's go with stuff.
I like stuff.
Okay. What kind of stuff do you like?
I do like sandwiches.
Okay.
It's pretty great.
Do you want to talk about sandwiches?
Controversial stance on that.
I know, I'm sorry. We could talk about sandwiches, but I mean, you know, we could also talk.
Who's gonna win the next gen sandwich war?
Well, as we were just saying, I mean, Microsoft
Subway
might
get this fucked up.
Okay. Yeah.
Oh, are we talking about actual sandwich companies and not video game companies?
Well, I'm sure if they wanted to, they could own.
Yeah.
I don't.
Oh man.
We should probably just talk about video games, though. I think.
Well. Games.
Games.
Games. Yeah. Games.
I can make a game about sandwiches.
Burger Time. That was a classic.
Burger Time is awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah. Let's just talk about all the best games that involve feature sandwiches.
Okay. You
know? Team Fortress 2. It's a pretty good game. It's a sandwich there. Yeah.
Yeah.
Hero Academy.
There you go.
Yeah. There. All right. Yep, sandwiches in that one.
Yep.
Yeah.
It's a
good sandwich.
Hmm.
Graham, tell me, does Project Crosszone have any sandwiches?
Not as far as I've gotten. I don't think there are sandwiches. But there's a lot in it, so
yeah, it could be. It's a sandwich of content. Let me tell you.
Yeah, man.
Yeah,
it's a veritable sub of franchises.
Yeah,
I don't know.
Not all of them mix particularly well, but you know, it's there.
So Project Crosszone. Yeah. So for those of you who don't know, it is a 3DS RPG that combines Sega, Namco Bandai, and Capcom characters in a game developed by Monolith Soft for Banpresto, and
That's
then localized over here by Namco Bandai again.
Yep.
So.
Let's start by saying the fact that we even got this game again is kind of crazy.
It's dumb because not only is it all these characters, but they seem to be characters very specifically picked to only have Japanese appeal.
Yeah, right. Most of them besides the Street Fighter guys and basically anyone from Capcom side, you know.
Yeah, the Capcom ones were fairly straightforward.
Yeah,
that's what this reminded me of, the Tatsunoko versus Capcom that we inexplicably got a while back, and this seems like the next more insane version of that.
Yeah, yeah, and I mean we got that largely because of Capcom, and like there wasn't a fighting game on the Wii basically ever, so there was a market there. but yeah, so this so the Capcom characters are pretty straightforward. You know, you got a lot of Street Fighter, Darkstalkers. You got Dante in there. You got Frank West. Mega Man X, Trondon,
Mega Man
stuff.
Everywhere this year.
Yeah, everywhere, but his
everywhere,
everybody on a Capcom title, right?
Yeah.
Maybe that's for the best.
Oh man, but yeah. So then the Namco Bandai stuff. Generally, the Namco Bandai stuff is stuff we've gotten over in the West. But like you know, there are Tails characters, Dot Hack. There's God's Eater Burst characters, and they joke about the fact that, like, in Japan it was called God Eater, but they decided to call it God's Eater here because they thought it was, I don't know, anti-religion to call it God Eater, but not God's Eater. Right. I guess there weren't many, like, polytheistic advocates coming out and saying that was bad.
I'm sure at least one of them got offended.
But yeah, it's just funny because the two characters from the game insist on calling it God Eater, but everyone else says God's Eater and they get frustrated. It's pretty funny. But yeah, so, I mean, those are fairly straightforward. Well, and then there are, like, the protagonist of the spiritual predecessor to this game, Namco Cross Capcom, in there. But so the weird ones are the Sega ones. Yep.
They're also probably the best ones.
They're like super great, but yeah, no one knows who the heck they are. No. So I actually wrote a feature about the characters we never saw here, a Gaijin guide, and if you want to check that out. But so the game has Sakura Wars characters, Valkyria Chronicles 3 characters.
Yeah.
Then it has, like, characters from Shining Force Exa. And
everyone's
Resonance of Fate.
I mean,
like, it'll end up, like, it has, like, Ulala from Space Channel 5, which people know enough now from other cameo appearances, but she's, like, a tacked on, like, extra character. It's a little strange. And the whole game's really strange because, like, there's a set of characters that are, like, original characters for this game, trying to tie everything together, but they have, like, a very intricate backstory that they've decided to try to weave into this plot. So the weakness of this game is that it all tries to justify the story.
They try way too hard. And, like, there are times when it's funny. Funny because they try so hard, but...
Yeah, but then there are times when it's, like... For example, you know, they go into the Dot Hack world, which is like a fake MMO, and then they all come out, and for some reason they're still their avatars from the thing, but they're like, I don't know how they justify that, because, like, they don't, I don't know. Anyway, it gets really dumb.
It's not, let's just be fair, it starts really dumb.
It starts really dumb, and it gets dumber.
Yeah, I mean, like, I'm the kind of person that no matter what, I will never skip cutscenes in games. Or skip dialogue. Like, if I buy a game, I want to see as much of that game as possible. About 2 hours in, I just started rapidly mashing the A button to skip through all the text to get to the battles. Because so tired of it.
There's a lot of the dialogue that is very specifically for people who are very familiar with the characters. Like, there are jokes about Resonance of Fate in this game.
Yeah.
Like,
some of it's legitimately good, but it's kind of
The first couple hours are super unbearable because, like, try to introduce the characters to each other, and, like, they have, like, Arthur from goblins, and, like,
hey,
you're that
Arthur
guy
from
the land of the ghosts and the goblins. Like, what are you doing? So, you know what, the combat itself is this, like, timing based button press combat, but then based on a tactical RPG that's very Disgaea like it's a lot about, like, surrounding yourself with the other people to be able to do combos, as opposed to like maintaining a defensive front or anything like that.
It's the opposite of, as a game I just played finished recently, it's the opposite of Fire Emblem in just about every possible.
It absolutely is. So it's not objectively good. But there's something inherently fun about it, especially if you like those characters. Mm. So,
I will say
we're both in the fence about it. I think.
Here's my thing about it. Okay. I'm just admittedly not a huge fan of strategy RPGs. The only series that I was ever really able to get into is the Fire Emblem games.
Was
I don't know whether
the best games.
Yeah, they are the best.
Well,
they're the best.
Valkyria Chronicles.
Well, yeah, I guess. That kind of. I mean, I'm talking about like turn based. I mean, but control the character. I don't know.
You're trying to say Valkyria Chronicles is not. I think you might have issues.
No. I just see it differently. I don't know why. I see when I think of a strategy RPG, like I think of something like Fire Emblem that's more traditional, like top down overview of the whole map. Little characters to move around. Even something like this Gaia kind of has that.
Sakura Wars 1 and 2 were very much like...
Yeah. I mean, the Sakura Wars game
and
we got...
For example, when we got to Sakura Wars 5, that game is kind of a lot like Valkyria Chronicles and like this movement area-based thing.
Okay, but my ultimate point is that I'm not a huge fan of strategy RPGs.
Okay. Well, this isn't much of one.
Yeah, and that's the thing. That's why I originally really liked it, because it doesn't have, there's like very little strategy to it other than try to gather all your characters together to beat up enemies fast. And then the major gameplay twist is the fact that it's kind of like this fighting game system where you have combos and you kind of have to juggle enemies and perform combos, but it still sticks to that turn-based thing where you have to wait until the little thing fills up for you to do another combo. So it doesn't feel as tactile as a fighting game, but it's not as strategic as a typical strategy RPG. So it doesn't really work on either end, and it just ends up getting kind of boring after a while. At least it did for me. So I went from one day really liking this game, at least in terms of the gameplay, to selling it. So
he literally means one day, you guys.
It was
actually kind of amusing to watch on Twitter. It's like, I love this game. Sold.
My opinion on these games can flip flop really easily.
Yeah.
So I was
having a little bit of trouble at the beginning of the game and kind of liking it. And I was talking to Andrew, and he was like, man, no, but this game is good. Don't you get it? This game is really fun. And less than 24 hours later, he had sold that thing.
I'm going to be fair. I don't think I ever called it good. I just said it was fun.
Sure.
But yeah, it became less fun. And maybe it gets better. Like, I was only about 5 or 6 hours in, to be fair. Maybe it does get better, like, the more you play. It just seemed like it was going to continue to be the same thing, where cutscene introducing a few new characters, and then you just do the same gameplay, same battle over and over again with very similar enemies. And I'm sure
need to enjoy the fact that these are these franchises are there. Like, that's it's 100% about that, because like the Sakura Wars battles, and it's like, they're here. Characters I like.
The music is fantastic. All the different characters.
So I don't know if you got I feel like you probably got far enough to see. Did you get to the second Sakura Wars battle before you sold it?
Yes.
At the end of it, where they had that conversation, and then Ichiro says something to who was it? It says something to one of the other Sakura Wars girls, and like said something positive, and then the little chime of saying something positive happened. Like,
with Frank West, Frank West has this whole, like, he takes pictures of female characters and he gets this little erotica thing that pops up. That's like from Dead Rising. Like, when you take pictures of different, the categories, there are different categories for each of the pictures you take and stuff. So great in jokes,
this is a game of in jokes.
Yeah, exactly.
If you don't like in jokes, don't get this game seriously, because that is what this game is.
Yeah, so basically you have to really like at least half or most of these characters, at least somewhat.
I'd say six of the characters.
Just six? Like, are we talking like six teams or six specific, like, individual characters?
I think three teams, and then at least two or three of the solo units. Okay. There's someone on the field at any time that you care about.
Yeah, I got through the
first 3 hours of dealing with like Virtual Fighter and Tekken guys. And I'm like, I don't care about Virtual Fighter and Tekken guys.
Yeah, but see, I don't know. Maybe just the game just didn't click with me. It did, but then it didn't, because even after getting to all the Sakura Wars stuff, which I was like,
Resident Evil stuff, right? I mean, like, that part was more your speed.
I don't remember.
Jill and Chris were super early. Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Like, Resident Evil Revelations level. By the way, that's the weird thing, is this is not picking the all-stars. This is not what this is. This is like, hey, let's have it's not based on like any of the more iconic Resident Evil games. It's based on Resident Evil Revelations. Like, it's not based on any iconic Shining Force game. It's EXA. And it's not like there were like three or four other Shining Force games since then, like between that and when Cross Zone released in Japan. But for some reason, they went back to this PS2 game that no one ever cared about. I don't know.
It was a good game, but
it's just weird selection of stuff.
It's a weird game that I would say, when I first played the demo, I thought there was more to it than what I was getting in the demo, and there kind of is, but not really, because I thought I was just like missing something. I was like, man, this seems like it's really complex, and there's just something I'm missing. So when I got the full game, and I found out that I pretty much am experiencing the exact same thing I was in the demo, I'm like, oh, all right. So, I mean, I would say I think there are actually two demos out now, so if you're curious about, if you're on the fence about the gameplay, at the very least, I should say play that first before you put down the money for it. But
I'm glad you got it because it's weird, yeah. And I like having weird things.
Yes, I'm very glad we got it. And yeah. And if you got the first run of the game, you got this limited edition, which comes with a pretty nice soundtrack and somewhat decent art book.
Unfortunately, it doesn't seem to have a lot of, I think, not a lot of Sega stuff on it.
The soundtrack?
Yeah.
I didn't actually listen to it. I just looked at the track list. And
yeah, but it has some. It wasn't like a Project Cross Zone soundtrack as much as it was a compilation soundtrack of things from the games, which is great.
That's fine.
I mean, half of it was Project Cross Zone soundtrack. Anyway, let's move on. Let's stop talking about Project Cross Zone.
Yeah, we should probably do that.
It's not helpful.
Graham, you've also been playing something else though.
Okay. yeah. So it's a lot like Project Cross Zone.
Oh yeah?
No. Under no circumstances is it anything like Project Cross. So I've been playing the latest installment in the Magic the Gathering Duels of the Planeswalkers franchise, Magic 2014.
Now Chris can wake up.
Yeah.
Well, no, I can't, because for some reason WotC and Nintendo don't talk to each other, so I still don't really have sufficient access to this game discuss it.
You do like Magic.
I do, and I like the fact that I've heard that this version now has sealed deck play, which is my second favorite format.
So it doesn't have it's not as robust as I wish it would be, but so every year they tend to, they put new base level decks each time, and it's usually the exact pretty close to the decks they're selling in stores anyway, as a kind of a promotional thing. But they always add in one special mode each time, depending on whatever the company's happening to push that year. Sometimes they do Arch Enemy, where it's like a whole bunch of people against one really powerful person.
That is one of my favorite formats.
Yeah, that was really cool. And then Plane Chase they did, which it's just you can move between areas that have special effects. That's not great.
That's a variant on an old multiplayer variant where it's called Chaos Magic, where you had this list of enchantment effects that you determine randomly every X turns or whatever.
Yeah, but as far as a game adaptation, it wasn't stellar. But so this year they are doing sealed play, where it gives you a pool of cards, and then you make a deck out of it. And then the way the you make them, and then you can play online with them. But also there's a campaign you can go through where every couple matches you win, you get another pack.
Well, from what I understand, your 40 card sealed deck is going up against 60 card constructed decks, isn't it?
In the campaign, yes.
Yeah, which that seems weird.
Yep. They have made the first few a little weaker than their constructed usual version. It's not an easy campaign. And what happens is you get your pool of cards, and I love this from actual Magic, just because.
What is the mix? Is it an M14 equivalent?
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. In fact, I'm pretty sure it is M14.
Right.
The whole game is only that. So you open up these packs, and they have a few rares, and they have a couple uncommons and blah blah blah. But the fun of that is making a deck with these weaker cards that you'd probably never use. Something about being forced to have a smaller pool of stuff. And the way that Wizards inevitably is trying to make money off this is that you have two slots where you can start, make a sealed deck, and then go through and get it better. And you can't erase them unless you just get rid of your whole save file.
Ugh.
But you can buy more slots.
You open six horrible packs, and that slot is basically a waste of time.
Yeah, but you can buy more slots.
Of course you can.
You can buy you can buy crazy amounts of slots, like I think it goes up to 20 or something. it's unfortunate how they handle that. And also there's not a way to play locally or anything like that. The only local mode this time is to hit a giant against some people online. Which is unfortunate. The fun of the year they did the Arch Enemy campaign was really great, because you could play with three people against the computer trying to do horrible stuff to you, and that was just a lot of fun. But yeah, I don't know. It, Yeah, it's Magic again. I'm gonna play it a little bit more, and then post the review sometime this week. But yeah, I do like that they've improved the production values this year. That part's nice. You know, like when they first started, they had like really, really bad like sketch work storyboards as the cutscenes, and now they have, you know, I something between a motion comic and like it maybe can, like seems like CG going on. Like decent CG, but also not like super fluid. Like it's more like CG to have other things moving between scenes. Anyway, but it doesn't matter that much. It still has the same structure. You play to unlock a card, and then you play to unlock another card, and you play to unlock another card. But you know, it's interesting because you know, the biggest change here is that it's based on M14, and M14 brings a lot of things back to the game that haven't been there a while. Specifically slivers.
Yeah.
Slivers aren't this game.
Not looking forward to that in real life.
Yeah.
Although at least these slivers only count your own army and not the whole table.
Yeah. So for those who aren't familiar with it, I guess I should explain. Slivers basically give an ability to all the slivers you have.
So if you have a sliver with flying, every sliver you have has flying. If you have what it used to be, if you have a sliver with flying, every sliver in play on either side of the board has flying, which became a nightmare to keep track of if, God forbid, you should wind up in a mirror match.
Yeah, and yeah, it would be like 15 slivers out there. It's like, what do I have? I have double strike, but wait, did you just give all of us defender? What is happening?
Right. So the New World Order is the logo for making things simpler and less complicated and caring about your opponent's side of the board as much. And there's some other rule changes coming into Magic along with that. I don't know if the new Legend rule applies to Duels of Planeswalkers or not, but that's kicking in.
Yeah,
within,
I don't know.
14 releases in a couple weeks. God, is it July already?
it will be.
Yeah, I know.
It is. Yeah. Anyway, yeah. So that is that game. Man.
Wizards, a modest proposal. Nintendo of America is not that far from where your HQ is.
Yeah.
Can you talk to each other, please?
Like, you could probably flick a mountain outside the window and it would land in their parking lot. If you're good. You gotta be good.
I'm pretty sure the Wii U could handle this game.
I mean, it's on Android now, so, right. Like, it's on, like, almost everything.
Wouldn't that game be perfect for the Wii U with the controller, too?
You would think so.
Yeah. Yeah. Yes.
But then a lot of games would be perfect for the Wii U, but that's another story.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Maybe next year. Maybe next year.
Well, if E3 is any indication, yes, next year.
And every year after that.
Right, but not now. Not until maybe October. September, I guess.
Yeah.
Well, you guys covered that last time.
I was just saying Magic, but yeah, sure.
Yeah. Sure, yeah.
Literally anything. I guess we could also talk about that. Okay, let's keep going.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, let's talk. You know what? You guys, Graham and Chris,
okay,
have this thing called the Ouya.
It exists.
It exists. It is officially out as of this recording.
Yeah.
It's not just for Kickstarter
not the
folks
version,
anymore.
Not the version we have, but yes, the version is out.
Yeah. Yes, a version of the Ouya is out, available to the public. So I figured we could talk about the Ouya. Tell me about the Ouya. So I guess to start, I guess I could start by asking, like, in terms of the system itself, the basic like architecture of the system, the controller, the menus, the interface, how is that stuff just navigating
better
stuff?
Than it was when I got it?
Yeah.
What's
and
that?
I should say that the device you're getting in the box and the device we have are incredibly similar. Most of the changes were just done in firmware. There were a couple tweaks to the faceplate of the controller mainly.
Yeah. Do you have the sticking O button?
I've had that happen like once before.
I've had it happen a lot. When we talk about the games we've been playing, I'll discuss it. But it's a lot of mashing the button, and every now and again it's stuck. It's easy enough to unstick.
So I mean, the first run of Kickstarter controllers, the faceplates didn't leave much wiggle room for the buttons, so they get a little stuck sometimes.
I'll be honest, I haven't heard many positive things about the controller in general.
It's not horrible. It's not good. And yeah. I would recommend whenever possible to use either a DualShock 3 or a 360 controller. Most of the time, those work with games.
Yeah. And I've heard, I don't know if you, if Graham, you'd probably be the one to know this, but I heard that if you don't have a wired 360 controller, you can use the wireless adapter for PC and that'll work on the Ouya. Is that true?
Yeah. Okay. I don't have one, but I know people who've done that. I use DualShocks and then a USB hub with wired 360 controllers to get my full complement of 8.
Of course.
But yeah. But there are some games that don't have that support yet. They actually, from when I got it to now, there's been like a system-wide support, so all the menus support them.
Okay, that's good.
So yeah, I just recommend not using the UI controller when you can, but the UI controller isn't horrible.
Right, it's a very serviceable
controller.
Feel a little cheap. I'm not sure if some of the problems I'm experiencing with it are with the controller or with the Android part of it, where they've... Most of the games still have the kind of mobile roots on them.
Yeah.
So they're not as responsive as I would like them to be.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But other than remembering which button is which, and that's not one of the reasons I never adapted the DualShock, is because I can never tell one button from the other.
Yeah.
I know the zero, the O button's on the bottom, and where's the U?
Okay, that U is in the left. The fact that A is on the right.
I just love the fact that they just had to do their own thing with the buttons. They couldn't.
To
just
be
do
fair, it. Well, yeah. That was a Kickstarter suggestion.
They all had circles, and then they're like, you know, colorblind people need
Hansel
letters.
Name.
Yeah, yeah.
They could have still gone with A, B, X, Y, you know?
You get used to it.
I know. I'm just
the
saying.
The colors are the same, so if you just,
super
like,
weird.
If you're used to, say, 360 colors, it's those colors in those positions.
And the A button is where the A button usually is.
Oh, yeah, I know.
A button functions as, like, a B button.
Right. Oh. More
which but is red, so it's okay.
Right. Yeah. I don't use the right stick that often. The left stick I use. That's pretty responsive. I haven't used the click. The D-pad seems really stiff, but I guess
The D-pad is stiff, but I'd even say it may be better than the 360 D-pad. Like, that's not saying much, but yeah, it's not great.
And then the weird touchpad in the middle of it is just something I occasionally hit by accident.
I didn't even know about the touchpad.
Yeah, so there's a touchpad in the center, and that part is good for games that say forget to say map things to controller buttons sometimes. Like they wouldn't be like crucial functions, but say like, oh, and you know, in the pause menu there's like this little like mute button in the corner, or this little, you know, whatever, you can actually go and get it, and especially if you're testing things and things like that. And I'll mention something later about that touchpad. But yeah,
so I mean,
besides that,
you guys wouldn't. Well, I don't know. Maybe Graham has, but you guys probably wouldn't pay an extra $50 for another Ouya controller, would you?
Not at this point. Everyone seems to be embracing the fact that other controllers are better, okay. It's not just me, then any game of any worth is fixing that. So
yeah, good. Where this is billed as, and its main selling point is being an open source console,
yeah.
The path of least resistance is going to win more often than not.
Yeah.
Good. That's good. All right, so yeah, that's the system itself. Let's dig into some games. I guess let's start with you, Graham. You've probably played the most so far. Name a game off the top of your head that you think best represents the Ouya at this point in time.
Bomb Squad.
Bomb Squad? Tell me about Bomb Squad.
So Bomb Squad is this, basically, if you take the Bomberman formula, but then place it in like a Little Big Planet physics-based environment, that's Bomb Squad. Mm-hmm. It is designed by this guy who's like a graphic artist for Pixar. And it originally released on the Mac in December 2011. But yeah, I think now it's getting like a mobile port or something, but I wouldn't play that version. but the idea is that you can play up to 8 players. And there are lots of modes. There's like a deathmatch thing. But you can throw bombs, and you can also pick up people and throw them.
And I love games that let you pick up people and throw
them. But like, since it's all physics-based, you can like run and throw them, and they go further, but also to do that, to run, that gives them a chance to fight off, or, you know. And if you get momentum, you'll sometimes run off the side of yourself and die. Yeah, so there's like a death match. There's like a race. There's like a capture the flag. There's like a hold on to the flag by yourself for the longest amount of time thing.
Are there power-ups and stuff like Bomberman?
Yes. So there are bombs that stick to people, bombs that explode on impact, bombs that freeze people. I mean, it's I don't know. It seems really well thought out. It has this, like, I'm not going to say claymation look, but all of the models were made out of clay and photographed. So it's an interesting aesthetic. I don't know. It's just a heck of a lot of fun. The way it works is they work on playlists, and you basically choose whether you want to do free for all or teams, and then you choose your teams if you're going to do teams. But then it just throws you in, and it has all these different levels. Like there's like a football thing where your job is to get the flag to one side of the screen, and then like to stop the other person, and like you got to do that a certain number of times. There's a hockey one, which is it's on ice, and you got to get this hockey puck in the goal, which is probably the hardest level. Wow, there's this one level where you have to hit the jump button a whole bunch to fly, and that doesn't really work. But otherwise, I don't know. It's inconsistent, but inconsistent in ways that are interesting. And then also there are levels where, say, if you're good at throwing a bomb, you're going to win. There are levels if you're good at picking up people, you're going to win. I don't know. I just you play it and people want to keep playing it.
It sounds fun.
It's $4.99. But every game on the OES starts free and has some sort of point at which you pay.
Which is an awesome feature.
Yeah, it's pretty great. There should be better documentation on how much something costs before you download it and then try to buy it.
But that's not consistent. If we talk about one of the games I just tried, I don't think there is like it's kind of a microtransaction thing.
Yeah.
The base game is free, and then you just add a bunch of crap to it.
Right.
Or, you know.
Yeah. But, so let me finish talking about Bomb Squad, I guess. It's just, man. So it was on the store when I first got my Kickstarter copy, and I got people over and we started playing it, and we had six people, and it worked with a 1 hour trial, and we just played through the hour, and then everybody's like, buy now. We got to keep playing. And we played for another 5 hours, and then we played it the next week for 4 or 5 hours. And then like, I don't think we're going to stop playing Bomb Squad for a while. It's just super fun.
So, would you say if you have a bunch of friends and you need a reason to buy the Ouya, is that game reason enough?
Yes. There's another game I can talk about in a bit. It is also a good reason.
Okay, cool. Sounds fun. So Chris, what was the game you were mentioning?
I was mentioning a game I picked up or started playing a little bit last night just to kind of fill up my repertoire to prepare for this hot podcast a little bit more was, I think it's called Deep Dungeons of Doom. kind of like our little retro RPG type thing where it's basically each combat is timed button press. It's not like a quick time thing. It's like you have a cooldown meter. Mm-hmm. Like when it flashes at a certain point, it cools down faster.
Yeah.
Okay.
But it's like this offense and defense, and you basically just keep going down fighting monsters all the way. And there's three different, eventually you get access to three different characters, and they have different strengths and whatever. It's the Crusader you start with, and you pick up a mercenary and a witch. And it's just old school, like button mashing RPG combat.
Yeah.
Except it's not really an RPG. But like I said, it's free as far as I can tell just to play, and you can play free forever, and that's probably what I plan on doing. But the monetization aspect is like you get resurrection tokens.
Yeah.
Start with so many, and as you clear levels, you'll get more. And they will basically let you start where you dropped instead of having to start the whole chain over again.
Mm-hmm.
And I ran out of those pretty quickly. So you can buy more of those. You can buy more gold. You can buy more whatever and this, that. And you can buy actually more levels. I saw a few of the options.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But like in and of itself, it doesn't look like there's pay to unlock the full version of the game. This is the full version of the game microtransacting you to death.
Yep.
Yeah.
I mean, it's going to take a lot of that mobile formula of like whatever business model you want to try, you can do it. And the cool thing is there are some Ouya games that are totally free. Just totally free.
Completely? Totally free?
Yeah.
That's good. So, I mean, even if you don't like want to spend any money right away, you could just get the Ouya itself and just have like a bunch of free games to play, either ones with microtransactions or ones that are just...
Yeah. In addition to games, there are various apps. Where I've mostly been using mine as a $100 Twitch TV box.
That works.
I watched the Grand Prix Las Vegas last weekend. 4,500 Magic players, biggest collectible card game tournament ever, playing Modern Master Sealed. And I watched 9 or 6 rounds of that because they're in Las Vegas, so they're 3 hours behind me.
Yeah. Is the streaming quality solid?
The streaming quality was pretty good. Any hiccups I noticed, I think were on their end and not my end.
Okay.
So that's been working pretty well. I mean, it worked better once I found or they added the ability to adjust the resolution of the screen. Because when I first got it, it was kind of cutting things off a little bit, and it took me a while to finagle it onto my TV screen.
Yeah, the first version of the app was just rough to begin with.
Yeah.
You couldn't, like, search for things. You could only get things via categories.
Still can't search for things.
Really?
Unless it hasn't updated since I last tried it. Man. But yeah, categories, yeah. Games currently played.
But they're working on all that stuff. So. Yeah.
But I've used it for that. You can get an app that I like, the Blue Board, lets you use your Android phone as a keyboard, which is good because on-screen keyboards are horrible.
Yeah, that sounds like a good useful feature.
That came in handy.
Yeah,
a couple of times. And I'm going to talk about a couple more games that I've tried. I've got a couple. Yeah. One game I want to recommend, and one I want to recommend everybody avoid. And the one to avoid breaks my heart.
All right. Okay. So let's go back to Graham then. You mentioned another must-have for the
Yeah. So this one is getting a lot of buzz right now. People have probably heard of it actually, which is weird because it's an Ouya game.
Yeah.
It's Tower.
I think I have too. Yeah.
So there is a word of warning on that. This is a $15 game. But
and it's not good solo, right? It is
under no circumstances a game you should play by yourself. But the idea of Towerfall is that it is this arena battle game. I guess if there's a genre that includes Smash Brothers, it's that. It has a pixel art aesthetic, surprise.
Weird.
But the idea is you start out with three arrows, and anytime you get hit by an arrow or someone stomps on your head, you are dead.
Oh, wow.
So, and when you shoot an arrow, you can retrieve it, but otherwise you're not going to get arrows back. And
can you retrieve people's arrows?
Huh? Yes.
Nice.
As long as you're not retrieving them while they're in the middle of being shot at you, because then you just...
Right.
That's getting hit. You know. And they're power-ups and such. But the idea is that it's this cutthroat game of, like, just, like, trying to lure people out or outmaneuver people.
Sounds like Killer Dodgeball.
Yeah. But the screen loops, so if there are any, like...
Oh, God.
Like, you can fall from the bottom to the top and you go from the left to the right, so you can kind of...
loops on both ends.
Yeah.
Nice.
So you can maybe sneak past, and that's a good way to, you know, have an interesting shot. But also, people can pay attention to you doing that and be prepared.
Yeah.
But so it's just this really, it's really tight game. Everything is very intentional. Like I guess the game I'd compare it to as far as movement goes is like Spelunky, mm-hmm. where like you it's definitely not that light floaty physics based thing from Bomb Squad. It's like you will catch the side and then you will move up at exactly when you want to move up and then like and wall jump and like it's very intentional movement. But the idea is you can play up to four people, and there are a couple of different modes. There's a death match, but the main way to play is this thing called Headhunters, where you get a point for every kill you get, and the round goes until everyone but one person dies. And if you kill yourself, then you lose a point. But you're basically like kind of playing up to 10 kills. Mm-hmm. But it's this incentive, you know, where you want to try to get out there and kill them the one time. But then getting out to kill someone usually means that the person who didn't move before you was aiming at you and you're dead.
So is this, I don't remember if you mentioned, is this just for like up to four players, up to eight players?
Up to four. Yeah. So this one isn't ludicrous like Bomb Squad.
Okay.
Most of them won't be. But yeah, so it plays up to four. Two is fun if you want to do that. It's kind of cutthroat in the way that like say playing two player Smash Brothers is. But the idea is there are power-ups. There are like bramble arrows, which are arrows when you shoot them and they hit a surface, then like thorns come around so you can kind of get people from around corners. There are laser arrows that bounce around.
Wow.
I don't know. They're interesting things. There are power-ups that one power-up makes the world have the same effect as like touch fudge, you get dizzy. Like it does the little like back and forth thing, which actually, if you're trying to line up a shot, is pretty effective at getting you. But yeah, I mean, it's very tightly made and interesting and worth checking out.
Yeah,
it may come to other platforms at some point, but it's getting a really big boost for this Ouya thing. So
yeah, I think that's the one. Yeah, that's the one Ouya game that everyone's talking about. It seems.
People have been talking about some other stuff too.
Those aren't games. those are ways to play other games.
Well, sure.
Yeah, there's other stuff too.
Yeah. But yes, I'll let Chris talk about his stuff, but I do want to mention one more thing. The interesting thing about the kinds of games you can play on the Ouya is that I like that there are these full polished experiences that I really like and will continue to play for probably months to years, mm-hmm. mixed in with these really weird small things. Like, so, like, the one that I think people may have talked about before is No Breaks Valet. Under no circumstances is that ever something that anybody would ever pay for or whatever. But it's a game where cars come out from the side, and all you can do is steer them, and they slowly, slowly slow down, and you're trying to park them in parking spots. But what usually ends up happening is everything crashes.
yeah, that seems to be the result. That's a game. Almost every time.
There's a game that just came out a couple days ago from Terry Cavanaugh, which he said it is inspired by Button. Yeah, I don't know if I've talked about Button. The game where basically you have to, like, you know, it's like up to 8 players. You have to, like, hit the button first or, like, basically tackle people that you know. But it is inspired by Button, and it is just this game. It's called Nutdob. It's Button backwards. where Plumber. You hit, like, everybody press all the buttons in their controller, and then it starts, and then it's just one prompt. It's like, whoever's furthest away from the controller after 5 seconds wins. That's it. That's the whole game.
Wow.
It doesn't have any feedback or anything. That's just a game, but it's free and you can download it. I don't know why I'd play it, but it's a joke. It's funny.
I'm sure it's cool for 5-10 minutes.
It's cool for the one time and you're like, that was a good joke. But that's okay. That's of the level that it is fine if it's free.
So the Ouya has a few good games and a few good jokes is what you're saying.
Yeah.
Okay.
The trick is finding them because the Discover navigation has gotten better since it first arrived at my house, but yeah. it's still
not great if you want to get things awkward. That they are not immediately recommending.
Yeah.
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 All right. So Chris, what were the two games you wanted to talk about?
All right. The game I want to recommend to anybody who hasn't played it already, and even some people already have, like I actually have, is Nightmare Tower by the Juicy Bee Studios, which was a flash. It is a flash game, really. And I lost an entire weekend, an entire afternoon at work playing that game.
Yeah.
Because where it's you're a knight trying to rescue various princesses at the top of this tower, but you do it by you getting launched off on a rocket. And then as you soar up, you have to slay monsters, and somehow you gain bursts of vertical speed by doing that.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
And it's just dumb, repetitive fun as you, like, and then you get further and further up, and as you get more gold, you go to the shop and you buy more stuff to make you hit harder, make you take more hits, all kinds of different power-ups you can get along the way. And you just get further and further up until you eventually get all the way up to the top and take on the boss, and then you unlock survival mode, and then that's a whole nother kettle of fish.
Yep.
But that game will suck you in for an afternoon. Easily.
Oh, all right. And I take it. Said, I did that. I was going to say, I take it it's free?
No.
It's not.
You can play. I forget where the limitation is because I unlocked the full version so quickly. I forget. Like, I think you may be limited in how much of the power ups you get, and you really need to get some of those power ups in order to climb all the way up. But it is, the flash version is free if you guys want to play that. But on the, I like having it on the big screen with a controller in my hand and not using the mouse.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or I think it might have been keyboard and spacebar. I don't remember. But like I said, I lost an entire afternoon doing that one day, and then I saw it on this. I'm like, I'm going to do that again. So
there you go.
Yep. That's a ringing endorsement. And the one that breaks my heart is the Pinball Arcade.
Uh-oh.
Yeah.
All right. When you download the Pinball Arcade, you get the Medieval Madness table for free, which is a table I'd never played because it wasn't on the Pinball Hall of Fame things that I got on my Wii. It was on the 360 version or whatever. I downloaded it, pirated the free table, and it wouldn't launch the ball. All right, pull back on the stick, let go, and nothing.
Wow.
I demoed the Star Trek Next Generation table, which by chance happened to have a push button launch. So I was able to launch the ball. And then I discovered the other problem with the game, and that is the fact that I'm assuming this is due to its Android platform. It is the sluggiest pinball thing I've ever had the misfortune to play. Like, I push the button, and then maybe the flipper goes up, which is not what you need in a pinball. The Farsight Studios does awesome, awesome virtual pinball work, and this is not it.
Yeah, I was going to say, like, the other versions of that game, like, almost every other version of that game, I
It's amazeballs, I know.
Those games are great, but that's not this one.
This one actively makes me mad. They did fix whatever was causing the Medieval Madness not work. I tried that, and this Flipper problem still killed it for me.
But it's still just like the latency problem. Like there's
latency
too slow.
It is not responsive. It is not the response you need for an accurate virtual pinball simulation.
That's a shame. But you can get that game pretty much everywhere else. So I guess if you have other systems. Yeah.
You can if you don't have the consoles that I have, yes.
Yeah.
Right. And there are a couple games like that that just aren't. I'm hoping that patches will fix them. There was an RPG that just came out, Ravensword Shadowlands. Yeah. That is like this like Skyrim-like game, but at this point it runs at like 8 frames a second. And like at like a 4-second delay to input, and it's like, what is happening right now?
Another one that's kind of along the same lines as something I tried yesterday is WizOrb.
No, hey, WizOrb's fine.
WizOrb is great on PC, but I guess not on.
It's
I haven't had any issues with WizOrb. I got that full version because kickstarted Mercenary Kings. They gave it to you, but yeah,
I can't get the pad to move in a way that I find acceptable. Like I'm using the D-pad, and it's not. It feels sluggish. Like I said, I'm not sure if that's
maybe it's the controller, or not the game.
But if I use the stick, it moves way too fast. No. I can't find even to make that function. I like the game.
Yeah.
And because for those who don't know, WizOrb is at its core an RPG. Like at the background, it's an RPG. But what it really is Arkanoid.
Yep.
Yeah.
Breakout, whatever you want to call that.
Yeah.
So it's like an RPG version of Breakout, which is so insane that I just had to give that a shot. And it's like the promise of it.
Yeah,
it's just something in the execution is not flying with me at this point.
See, I've never been good at it, so I really can't tell you whether it was because of the controls.
Yeah, I can't condemn it, but it's winning me like I want it to.
Now, Graham, you played the UEI version as well.
Yeah, okay. Again, because they sent everyone who backed Mercenary Kings a code to unlock it, and that was like the first thing that happened the first time that like the UEI store went live was like, hey, we got this thing. And like, you know, Mercenary Kings is coming to the system at some point. Yeah. I think soon actually, cause it's developed in Unity.
All right. Well, but if you've had a good experience, maybe it's the UEI controller being the problem on that end.
It may be there are times when the UEI controller just does weird things. Like there are times when like, it will just like not read an input or read an input constantly to the left. Like I'm not going to the left right now. It'll stick a little bit. I mean, it's not the best controller. It's fine though. I mean, it's okay. Yeah, it's not good. I wouldn't use it.
So yeah, if you have any other controller that you can hook up to the UEI, use those over the one.
And especially if you're considering getting playing multiplayer games and you're gonna buy another UEI controller to do that, don't do that. Go buy even if it's a third party 360 controller or something. That's fine.
Although I will say that has been what is. Hampered me the most in experiencing new games is that most of the ones I see up there right now appear to be like twitchy platformer type things, and I don't trust the controller enough.
Yeah.
You should pick up a 360 controller.
Yeah.
I don't have a reason to do so.
Get a wired 360 controller for the UEI.
See, wired is a problem in my house right now.
Mm.
Okay.
Because I like one of my favorite things I read about the UEI. One of the guys was talking about the new firmware update and installing it up, but one of the legitimate complaints he has is that you have to get up and walk across the room to turn it on like a damned animal.
Yeah.
You can't do it remotely. You have to actually push it, and you have to turn it off that way too.
I don't think that's something you can fix with a firmware update.
No, that's hardwired into the system.
Yeah, it's unfortunate. And I don't know if you've had this issue, but when you use the commands to power it off, it just comes back on after 15 seconds.
Sometimes, yes. I've had that happen a couple times.
The UEI is just like, wait a second.
If you hold the button down on the system a whole bunch, that works fine. But in the firmware update, they did a hit Y and then choose whether you want to turn off the controller or the system. And that just resets it.
Yeah, press and hold the button is what I've been sticking to, and then going to confirm to turn off. The other thing I do like with one of the most recent firmware updates is that they explicitly mentioned what the UEI home button does on the control pad.
Yeah, they fixed that. They've made it universal now where
you just do random things.
But like what happened was since there's no start button, people used it as a start button.
Yeah. Right.
But then some games wouldn't use it as a start button and would be like, okay, that's how you get to the menu. So now in every game, hitting it twice takes you back to the menu.
Right. Which is good because Nightmare Tower is one of these games where without that feature, there was no way to get back to the menu.
great.
Yep.
So I, yeah, there's trial and error to get out of the game. It's like, I'm done playing this for now. How do I back out?
Yeah.
So suffice to say, there are some problems to be worked out.
And that was stupid, honestly. Anybody who was expecting this to be perfect out of the box was lying.
Oh, I know. It's a $100 tiny cube that plays Android games. I mean,
it is a tiny cube too. It's coming out of the back, almost as big as this thing is.
Yeah. And so one thing, while people are waiting for games to come out, I'm not vouching for this being a particularly reliable way to do things, but you can use that address to load the Amazon App Store on there. Google Play, there's some like issue where you're not allowed to install Google Play on it. But you can install the Amazon App Store and install games through it, and like they work fine. If they don't have controller support, then you're gonna have to use that little touchpad to navigate them. So I wouldn't recommend doing it for lots of things. But there are some games that already have Bluetooth controller support on Android. Like, they're not like the best things you've ever played, but Kemco has been making JRPGs for Android for a while, and they're like 99 cents. And when you play them on Ouya, they're native full screen, and all the buttons work. Sometimes the controls are still on the screen. They usually you can turn them off. It maps right, and like, I don't know, it's worth checking out if you want to play games like that.
I wonder if I could do the Planeswalkers on this.
I think you could, they sell it. Well, I mean, it's free to play on Android, but you can load it on there and play it through the touchpad. Or you can, I don't know. You know what? You could plug in like a mouse and a keyboard on that thing and play it. At that point, you should probably get it on PC, even if it's a bad PC. But it's available. I don't think it has controller support on mobile. But that's totally something that they should do. They should just patch in controller support and release on Ouya. Come on. Or just release on the Wii U, which is probably, as it turns out, more lucrative than releasing something on the Ouya.
Really?
Well, yep. The number of people that have it is more.
Yeah, that's true.
There was a Mario game in that system. Not a lot has sold, but there was a Mario game in that system.
That's true. I was mostly joking. Mostly.
Okay.
All right. So any other last minute Ouya things, games, other
Sonic, Sonic 4, 1 and 2 and CD. We're supposed to be on it last Friday, and then because there was a big announcement that they were going to come there, and then neither company said anything at all about it on Friday, and no one seemed to notice the games were not on the system.
But you noticed.
I did.
Yeah.
I'm still eagerly anticipating a game. They had a little like a 5-minute indie contest type thing a while back while the Kickstarter was going
on. Yeah.
And one of the titles that got some sort of like a best in show type award is called Television.
Yeah, so that was the Killscreen Create competition, and we're starting to see some of those games. One of them was actually released this weekend. Television was basically like a WarioWare type thing based on like television channels and shows and things, and that seemed great. They're still working on it.
I will look forward to that when that is available, because that's. I mean, yeah. I had already backed the Hearset long before that happened, but that's kind of sold me on, ooh, that seems like something I would want to do on this.
Yeah.
Which is, everything else I've been seeing is, you know, twin stick shooters, multiplayer free-for-alls, whatever, and that's not really what I'm into. So.
Yeah. You should play some of those Kemco games. I'm joking, but you might want to play one of those. All right. Okay, that's a podcast.
Yeah.
Yep.
They can't all be epics. Thank God.
All right. So in 2 weeks we'll have more to talk about, right? Right?
Hopefully.
July's kind of slow.
I'll have a thing to talk about.
All right. Confirm. Yeah. Okay. Next episode we will be so tensei.
Yeah.
I want to have one thing real quick, since I didn't get to talk about it last week. Last time you guys is Animal Crossing. When this podcast posts and you guys are listening to it, in the comments, I will post my town's dream address if anybody wants to visit that.
Yeah.
And that seems like a good way to be sharing our towns with our listeners without actually having to do all the friend rigmarole.
Yeah. It's a good idea.
That's true. All right. I have. Yeah.
This is
Idle's game.
All right. But yeah, so for Sean, Andrew, and Chris, I'm Graham. See you in 2 weeks.
Thanks for listening to the Snack Bar Games podcast. Follow us on the web at snackbar-games.com or on Twitter @snackbargames.